Italy's government is on the brink of collapse over how to allocate emergency coronavirus rescue funds. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A fresh political crisis has engulfed Rome after former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi late yesterday pulled his small party out of the governing coalition. That's thrown into doubt the current government's ability to stay in power. And it all comes down to money and how to spend it. Italy is set to receive more than $240 billion in grants and cheap loans from the European Union. It's the biggest slice of emergency coronavirus recovery funding from the bloc. From the Italian capital, the BBC's Mark Lowen explains why allocating these funds has caused such a political divide.
Matteo Renzi wants less centralized control over the EU recovery funds. He wants more money to go to healthcare, rebuilding infrastructure and institutions. And Giuseppe Conte, the Prime Minister, has made some changes to the recovery fund plans to satisfy Matteo Renzi, but they don't seem to be enough. And so this has now come to a head. But I have to say that even though, you know, we're talking about the specific reasons why he's done this, most Italians, according to opinion polls, don't understand the reasons. The vast majority of Italians, according to one opinion poll, think that he is doing this for his own political career because of deep-seated animosity that go back many years between Matteo Renzi and the current Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte. It's almost, in a sense, kind of hard to pinpoint why he has decided to withdraw his ministers and why he thinks that this is an opportune moment to do this in the midst of a pandemic that's killed 80,000 Italians and caused the biggest economic crisis in Italy since the Second World War.
And to that point, what could a government collapse mean for the Italian economy, which, as you say, is already struggling not just from the huge impact of the pandemic, but years of sluggish growth?
Yeah, I mean, Italy has been the problem economy in Western Europe for many, many years, Victoria. It has not really grown since the start of the 21st century. It has one of the highest public debt levels in the European Union. So it can hardly afford yet another change of government at a time when it is trying to negotiate the spending of about $260 or $270 billion worth of recovery funds, which could really have a transformative effect on the Italian economy. It obviously, if there is a collapse of the government, is going to drive Italian bond yields up. It's obviously going to raise investor fears once again about the Italian economy. And Giuseppe Conte, the Italian Prime Minister, he has actually managed to keep a relative level of stability for a country that has had almost 70 changes of government since the Second World War. And so obviously the markets and international investors are going to want a continuation of him as Prime Minister in whatever form that takes, perhaps a reshuffled coalition, perhaps some kind of new support from some of Renzi's supporters, rather than going towards another election that could usher in the far right, according to opinion polls.
The BBC's Mark Lowen for us in Rome. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure talking to you.
Checking the numbers now, political instability in Italy isn't shaking investor confidence, at least not yet. The benchmark stock index in Milan is up 0.3% amid a broad rise in European markets. Fresh data in Germany showed the nation's economy saw its biggest contraction since 2009 last year, as it shrank 5%. Still, the statistics office suggested the economy steadied in the last 3 months of the year as officials put measures in place to control another wave of COVID-19. To Lebanon now, where the government has imposed a 24-hour curfew there for the next 11 days to limit spread of coronavirus. The crisis is expected to have caused the economy to contract 20% last year. Now, worries are growing about how the population will be able to weather this new set of severe restrictions. The BBC's Martin Patience has more from Beirut.
For the next 11 days at least, most of Lebanon will be in complete lockdown after the number of infections in the country surged to among the highest rates in the world. Schools, restaurants and even supermarkets will be closed. Instead, customers will have to rely upon deliveries. The curfew will worsen the country's economic collapse. Charities are warning that almost half the population don't have enough cash to buy food to see them through until the end of the lockdown period. Lebanon's dire economic situation has also affected the importation of medical supplies. So far, more than 1,600 Lebanese have died from the coronavirus, with that death toll expected to rise sharply in the coming days.
That's the BBC's Martin Patience reporting there from Beirut. Indonesia has the highest cumulative number of COVID-19 cases in Southeast Asia, and this week it began its mass coronavirus vaccination program. But controversially, the government decided the working age population will be vaccinated first, rather than older populations. The BBC's Rebecca Henschke explains authorities hope that strategy will help the economy recover more quickly.
Realistically, this is going to be quite a challenging approach. There's a country of 250 million people spread out across the world's largest archipelago. So they're talking about at least 15 months rolling out this first phase of the vaccine. They're using the Chinese Sinovac vaccine, targeting health workers and frontline workers first, and then rolling on to the working population between the ages of 18 and 59.
But that strategy is still in question, at least among some scientists who say there's not enough evidence to suggest a vaccine would prevent people carrying the virus from passing it on. So is that where, for Indonesia, the three-vaccine strategy, which involves the Sinovac vaccine, Pfizer and AstraZeneca shots, comes into play?
So a few phases in this, using three different types of vaccine in the hope that they will create this situation where people can safely go about their business and work. The government's really resisted shutting down the economy, stopping people from selling food on the side of the street or motorbike taxis moving around, because they know for those people it's very difficult for them to work from home.
Now, Rebecca, when it comes to the Sinovac vaccine, how does ethics sort of play into this? Because efficacy rates vary across the world. Brazilian regulators say it's just more than 50% effective. China obviously says it's 100% effective. Indonesia has it at 65.3%. Are people in Indonesia confident in receiving that particular vaccine?
There has been a lot of questions about the vaccine, about the speed that this has happened. There's also a lot of underlying resentment towards the Chinese in Indonesia. It will be interesting to see if people will take the vaccine. I think they will, given the fact that Indonesians are usually quite enthusiastic about taking part in public health initiatives, effectively vaccinated against measles and polio. And the Ulama Council came out very helpfully just before this rollout and said that the Sinovac vaccine, after a thorough investigation and audit, was halal, allowed under Islam, that it didn't have any pig or other animal products that would make it problematic.
The BBC's Rebecca Henschke for us. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
You can find all of our vaccine rollout coverage over on marketplace.org. Just click on the Fast Track tab at the top of the page. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.